In the beginning of Sedra Va'era, Torah says, Vayedaber Elokim al Moshe, Vayomer Elov Ani Hashem, Va'era el Avraham, el Yitzchak, el Yaakov, Bekel Shakai, Ushmi Hashem lo nodati lahem. The Rabban Shlomo speaks to Moshe. This is in response to Moshe Rabbeinu's complaining and questioning God's divine providence, insofar that God told him to go and redeem the Jewish people, and he went to Paro, and not only didn't he redeem them, things got even worse for them. They weren't given straw, they had to find their own straw and make the same quota of bricks. And Moshe Rabbeinu, feeling the pain of the Jewish people, went back to God. And the end of last week's Sedra, he said, Lama hari oso la'am hazeh, lama zeh shlachtani. Why have you done evil to these people? Why did you send me? Me'oz bosi al paro ledaber bishmecha. From the time that I went to Paro to speak in your name, heira la'am hazeh. Things got worse for these people. Ve'hatzelo itzavda samecha. And you didn't save them. So it's pretty strong words that Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Rabban Shalom. And what was the basic answer? Vayedaber Elokim el Moshe. Elokim is always the representative of Midas Hadin. God as the judge, sternness, what's it called, misfortune, is always represented by the name Elokim, when God deals out justice and punishment or whatever. And Hashem, Yudke Vavke, is God's name of mercy. So basically what God said to Moshe is, Vayedaber Elokim el Moshe, but you see as stern justice, judgment, punishment is really mercy. Because in the long run, everything the Rabban Hashem does is for the good. And sometimes the good has to come in a very stern way. Sometimes a person's sick, he needs an operation, it hurts. But that's what is going to save his life. Similarly, sometimes we need, as a kapara for the sins that we do or other situations that come up, the only way to alleviate the situation is to do something that's painful. But it's all merciful. The doctor who makes the operation is an angel of mercy. He's not hurting the person, right, even though it hurts. He's helping the person. It happens to be that that's the way to help him. And that's why the Rabban Shalom continued, Vo'era el Avraham el Yitzchak el Yaakov, and I appeared to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Rashi brings down, this is part of the answer to Moshe Rabbeinu. He said, many times I promised the avos things, and they never saw the fulfillment of the promise. Yet they never, and not only that, but they saw things that seemed to contradict that fulfillment. I promised Avraham Avinu he'd get Eretz Israel. He had to go spend an exorbitant amount to buy a burial place for his wife. And similar with Yitzchak and Yaakov. And they never questioned me. And you, the first time I send you, and things don't work out the way you thought they should have worked out, and you question me? It's a shame that they're lost and can't be found. So Moshe Rabbeinu responded to this, according to the Medrash, and he said, "Be'oz chatasi, I sinned with the word oz. May oz bossi al paro. From the time I came to Paro to speak in your name, things got worse for the people. So I sinned using the word oz. Uba'oz ani misakein, and I will correct my sin." Also using the word Oz, Shenemar, Oz Yashir Moshe. When Moshe sang at the sea, he also used the word Oz to correct the sin. So the question obviously is, if you had to pick one word out of those two sentences that Moshe Rabbeinu questioned God and came with complaints, Lama Hari Oso Lama Zeh, why did you do evil to these people? Lama Zeh Shlachtani, why did you send me? That's the first sentence. Second sentence, Ume'oz bossi al paro, from the time I came to Paro to speak in your name, Heira la'amazeh, things got worse for them. The Hatzer lo itzav, and you didn't save them. I would say the first sentence is a lot worse than the second one. How come? Why did you do this? Why did you send me? That's really, right, stern words. The fact that he said it from the time I went to Paro to speak in your name, things got worse, and you didn't save them, doesn't seem to be the major sin. If I were to pick a word that represented the sin, I would say it's the word lama. Why? That's the epitome of the sin. Why? Who are you to question me? Not Oz, may Oz, from then. Why was that the word that represented the sin? The answer, I think, is that when a person sees that he or others or Klal Yisrael are being chastised, are being yisurim, haroa yisurim v'aymala. Somebody sees suffering coming upon himself. So what is he supposed to do? He's not supposed to say stoically, well, everything God does is for the good, and I accept this as whatever, and finished. That's not what he's supposed to do. The Gemara says, haroa yisurim v'aymala, you chashbeish b'maysav, you mashmeish b'maysav. First, look into yourself and see what's it called, what you can correct, or what you can strengthen, or what you can learn from this, what you can use it as an incentive. It's not necessarily a punishment, but it's an agitation that can give you the ability to grow, to strengthen yourself. So that is what a person is supposed to do. He's supposed to question, why is this happening? But not why for information's sake. I'd like to understand your ways, God. Explain to me why you're doing this. That's not the idea. That would be madua. Madua has the word da, knowledge. Right? I'd like to be enlightened as to why this is happening. That's not what Moshe said. Lama means lima. For what purpose? Lama hariyosama zeh. For what purpose? For what? What is the purpose of this? Why are you doing it? What are we supposed to learn from this? That's not an aveira at all. That wasn't the sin. The sin was not to question vis-a-vis oneself. Moshe is a leader of the Jewish people. What can I go tell the people that they should learn from this bad situation? What is the purpose? Why is it? Was it necessary? That's the question. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, there's a mitzvah to try to understand everything about the Torah and everything about how God deals with us, in order that we should be able to function better, right? The more we understand, the better we can function. And even though it's true, na'aseh v'nishma, we don't make our functioning dependent on our understanding. We don't do mitzvahs because we understand them. We don't believe in God and have trust in Him because we understand what He's doing, right? We do it despite the fact that we understand or not. It's not a prerequisite to understand, to accept, or to do, or whatever. That's nasa v'nishma. But there's a nishma. After you accept to do, there's still an idea of understanding, as much as you can understand. Once one would explain, that was what Moshe Rabbeinu seemingly refused, or tried to get out of going on his mission that God gave him to be the Redeemer. And he tried always, I'm not worthy, the people aren't worthy, I can't speak, send Aaron. And God patiently answered him up to the last question, send Aaron. Then he got upset with him. And once I explained, Moshe didn't refuse to go. In fact, when God said to him, Moshe, he said, Hineni, I'm here. Whatever you want, I'll do. Right? I have no prerequisites, no conditions. But now that I've agreed to go, I'd like to understand what I'm doing. How come me? I'm not trying to get out of it. I understand that you know better. But can I understand a little bit also why I was chosen? Why the Jewish people are worthy of it? I don't understand that. I'd like to understand, because it'll make my mission more significant if I understand what I'm doing. So he didn't try to get out of it. He tried to understand what was doing. So why then was he... And that's why God didn't get angry with him. But God got angry when he said, why not Aaron? Because you can understand everything about your mission, right? That's fine. It'll make you function better. But why Aaron wasn't chosen, that's not your question. That let Aaron ask, not you. You can ask everything that will help your mission. Why am I the one? Why are they worthy? My mission will be better. Why I can't speak well? Why me? Also, what's your name? What should I say to them? I don't think they'll believe me. All those questions enhanced Moshe Rabbeinu's mission. But how come you didn't send Aaron? That doesn't enhance his mission. Right? That's a question maybe Aaron should ask. That's just information's sake. Information's sake, I'm not interested in hearing. And therefore, what's it called? The Meiri says, even though we don't seek to understand mitzvahs as a prerequisite for doing them, but once you accept to do them, there's an inyan to learn as much as you can about them and understand them. And the Pasuk says, Tuv tam vadas lamdeini, kibe mitzvosecho hemanti. Please teach me all the reasons, all the ideas, all the understanding, because I already believe in the mitzvah. I don't need the understanding to believe. I believe already. But now that I believe, I'd like to understand as much as I can. So therefore, the first sentence there, lama hariosa, lama zeh shlachtani, that was not the sin. That was perfectly fine for Moshe Rabbeinu to say, for what purpose are we suffering? Right? What can we learn from this? What can we do? What can we do to correct the situation? But the however, you have to, the questioning can't be to impugn and even to put a doubt that God knows what he's doing. Right? You're asking, what can I understand from this? But you're not asking, how come God did this? Okay? So, therefore, what a person has to believe is that ultimately, from God's standpoint, since he sees the whole picture, we don't see the whole picture, right? We only see the little bit that's in front of us. We don't see what came before this world, what comes after this world. So we can't put the thing into perspective. So we believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam, whatever he does is for the good, and somehow, as it fits into the picture of eternity, it ultimately is for the good. And that is what God said, Vayidaber Elokim El Moshe. Why is Elokim, Midas Hadin, justice, judgment, suffering, misfortune, is all represented by Elokim? Because Elokim is God within nature. Meaning, God, as he functions in a very limited way, right, very bound, with definite borders, and in a certain framework where you don't see the whole picture. That's Elokim. Elokim in Gematria is Hateva, God in nature. God in nature, right, one can see negative things because you don't see the whole picture. But Hashem is Yudke Vavke, means Ha Yehovah V'yeh, it's God beyond time. Unfettered with any kind of limitation. And therefore, it's the whole picture. In the whole picture, everything is mercy. So the name Yudke Vavke is God who is merciful. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. I sinned with the word Oz. I didn't sin by questioning what we can learn from the misfortune. Why is it happening vis-a-vis us? I did sin in saying, from the time I came to Paro, things got worse to these people. That already was talking about what God did, not what I can learn from it. That was a wrong statement. And the basic, the crux of the problem was, I took a moment and I, Oz means then, a moment, and I isolated it. And I judged God on that moment and didn't realize that God is beyond the moment, and God sees things in their totality of eternity, and I only saw that moment in front of me. And you can't make conclusions on the moment in front of you. You can learn from it. You can deal with it. That's why you see it in a limited way. But when you speak about God, you have to put it into the perspective of eternity. And therefore, one of the punishments that Moshe Rabbeinu got was, the Torah says, Atasira, now you'll see what I'll do to Paro, but Rashi brings down, but you won't see what I'm going to do to the 31 kings. It seems that Moshe was punished that he wouldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. But we know that that didn't happen until much later, with the sin of the Meriva, when he hit the rock. So I wanted to say, it doesn't mean he won't go into Eretz Yisrael. That wasn't the punishment. The punishment was, because you, Moshe, could not take that, this moment, and put it into perspective of eternity, so you're going to be punished that you're going to be able to see what's happening now to Paro, but you're not going to see now what's going to happen to the 31 kings. In other words, that Moshe had this vision at the time of eternity, right? Putting things into the perspective of eternity, when we went out of Egypt, he would have seen it as part of a whole process of coming into Eretz Israel. It would have been a different grandeur of what Yetzias Mitzrayim was. But God said, because you saw the Tzoris as something isolated, you're going to see this redemption as piecemeal. You're going to see the redemption, and then later you'll see the coming into Eretz Israel, but you won't see them as one continuity. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, what's it called, corrected his sin with the word Oz. Because it says, Oz Yashir Moshe. Moshe didn't say those words. The Torah's narrative says it. But what does it mean Moshe corrected his sin? When Moshe sang the song at the sea, did he do it because that moment was a salvation for the Jewish people? Something to think about. No. He took that Oz, he took that moment, and he put it into the perspective of eternity. Oz Yashir. That's what the Torah tells us. Moshe took that Oz, that moment, Yashir till Tchias HaMesim. He saw this salvation not being just good for the moment, but it's something that has significance all the way till the resurrection of the dead. So he was able to take a moment and put it into the perspective of eternity, which he wasn't able to do before. So that's how he corrected the sin. There's another idea here. A person has to see that even when there's misfortune, bad in the world or whatever, but it's not only how it affects him that's significant, but sometimes, even though it's bad, but there's good that comes from it, right? And on a universal basis, not just on my individual needs and whatever, how it affects me, how does it affect the world? We said you have to put it into perspective of eternity time-wise. We also have to put in perspective of the universe, of universalism, not just what it affects me. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu said, from the time I came to Paro, things got worse and you didn't save them. It's all bad. That's not true. Because for a few hundred years, since the death of Yosef, God's name was never mentioned in Paro's palace. You went to Paro the first time and you mentioned God's name. Isn't that something? Isn't that a benefit? Okay, you weren't saved. Things got worse for the Jewish people. From your own particular limited effect, it was all bad. But couldn't you see that on a larger scale, there were good things that came from it? Right? When I see you got into Paro's palace and you spoke to him in the name of God, that's something. It's a beginning. It's a Kiddush Hashem. Why don't you see that? And it's the same thing. That's how did he correct it? The same way. Oz Yashir Moshe. When did Moshe Rabbeinu decide to sing this song? After the Jewish people were saved, or even before they were saved? So the Torah tells us, Oz, when he saw the miracle of the splitting of the sea, he already decided to sing. Meaning, it had nothing to do with their being saved. It would be possible the Jews would drown too. But the fact that the world saw the splitting of the Red Sea, which showed God's power over nature, that in itself was worth it. Whether we survive or not is irrelevant. But look at the Kiddush Hashem. So he corrected the sin. The sin in the beginning was not to see anything more than his own and the Jewish people's own needs, and to see it as bad because how it affected them was bad. Not to see that maybe there were good things here that maybe didn't affect you, but there was a Kiddush Hashem. God's name was mentioned in Paro's palace. Here, instead of singing for the Jewish salvation alone, he already decided to sing from the time he saw the miracle, because that made a Kiddush Hashem in the world. Even if the Jews wouldn't benefit from it, but the miracle happened, I'm willing to sing for that. That corrected that sin too. That's why we say on bad things, Gamzu Letova. Right? This thing, right, it could be it's Letova in the perspective of eternity. It may not look to me good now, but it's in the perspective of eternity, it's Letova. But Gamzu, it's possible to say, even now, it's bad for me, but I do see that it's possible that something like this could have positive effects on the world if I don't only limit it to my own personal connection. Okay. That's why the Rabban Shem also said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Vo'era El Avram, El Yitzchak, El Yaakov. Rashi says, Vo'era El Ha'avos. Because every Jew has the potential to be like the Avos in those areas where they set the foundation for the Jewish people. We have the genes of the Avos within us. We have their potential, right? In the areas that they were Avos, where they were the foundation of the Jewish people, right? The root of the Jewish people. Whatever was in the root comes out in the plant. So the plant has in it the potential of the roots. So that's why Rashi points out on the pasuk Vo'era El Avram El Yitzchak El Yaakov, he says Vo'era El Ha'avos. I didn't appear to them as individuals. I appeared to them as the Avos, as the fathers, as the foundation and the root. And therefore, it's a shame that in you can't find that power. Every Jew, right, has to say Masa Yagiu Maisei LeMaisei Avos Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. When will my deeds reach the deeds of my forefathers? Do we think that we can be like the Avos? Yeah. Because our deeds are a product of what they created. We just bring out that potential. So in those areas where they set the foundation of the Jewish people, especially in this area of not questioning God, the Avos created that potential for all future generations, that if Jews want, they can gain the strength and belief and faith not to question. And therefore, the Rav Shem said to Moshe, where is that power within you? Right? In you, I don't find it. It's lost in you. That's also what God intimated as the answer. When I appeared to the Avos, I appeared to them as Shakai. Shakai means Sha'omar Liolomo Dai. God said to the world, enough. He let it expand to a certain point, and he set the parameters, the boundaries, the limitations of this world. Because there are boundaries and limitations, we don't see the whole picture. We don't see it now, and we don't see it in time. And because of that, we see bad. We don't see how it's going to fit into the eternal picture, and we don't see even how it fits into the current picture universally. So we have questions, and we have complaints. But that's because it's Kel Shakai, and that's how I appeared to the Avos, and I gave them plenty of reason to question me and to complain, and they never did. So in you, there should be this power that they created, and I don't find it in you. Ushmi Hashem, God who is beyond time, and the source of all creation, who's unlimited, who's outside of creation, right? That I didn't appear to them in that name. And they only saw that limited look, and Mamela, they saw things that appeared to be to them tragic, suffering, and not the fulfillment of what I told them. And yet they didn't question me. They didn't, Is it on? No. In any case, we have to function on two levels. One level, like we said, to feel the pain, to see things bad as bad, and to learn from it, to grow from it. Right? Part of the good that will come from that bad is to be able to empathize, sympathize, cry, suffer. All of that is sometimes the means for the good to come. If we stoically ignore the suffering or whatever and the bad, and just say, well, God, everything he does for the good, so I'll accept it as good, then we miss the point completely. So you have to function on two levels. One, recognizing, like Moshe did, Lo Mahariosa, that wasn't a sin. At the same time, we have to conclude in our minds that ultimately this is for the good. And not just it's for the good, but the crying and the pain is for the good. That's the part of the way the good comes about. So, to put it into the perspective of universe and perspective of eternity. So that's the idea of accepting the bad with simcha. Doesn't mean being happy. We don't dance at funerals. We cry. But I accept the fact that my crying is for a purpose. That ultimately, in the larger picture, there's a reason why I have to cry. And the crying will bring good to me and to everything. It's all for the good. It's not good necessarily as I see it, but I believe that it's for the good. That's the idea. That's what the rabbis say, Lo ka olam hazeh ha olam haba. This world is not like the next world. In this world, on good things we make a bracha tova meitiv, and on bad we make a dayin ha'emes. In the next world there's only one bracha, dayin ha'emes. Doesn't mean that in the next world there won't be any bad, and in this world there's bad and good, so there's one bracha, here there's two brachas, because that has nothing to do with the bracha. It has to do with what happens. What it means is that in the next world, when we look back at what happened in this world, we'll only make one bracha. Even for the things that appeared bad, we'll make a bracha tova meitiv, because ultimately they were for the good. And so that's why in this world we don't read God's name as it's written. We read God's name Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, which is a name of din, of judgment and justice and harshness. But it's written Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is the name of mercy. Because we have to know that God is merciful, and that is ultimately everything is for the good. At the same time, the way we read it, the way we relate to it, we see bad in this world. We see suffering. And it affects us, and it's supposed to affect us. but the way that it affects us and how we handle it and how we accept it, right, is the way the good comes out from it. So you have to function on, you read it one way, but you say it a different way. It's written one way, it's read a different way. Okay. Could be that, not could be, the Tzel Rosh Yeshiva says that that's why the redemption had to come with the following code words. Pakod pakadati eschem. I have doubly remembered you. So Tzel Rosh Yeshiva explained that the person would come to redeem the Jewish people would have to make them aware that God didn't remember them only when he was saving them, but he remembered them also during the whole time that they were in bondage and suffering. God didn't abandon them. This was necessary. They needed this suffering. It was like an operation. They needed the operation. There was something that was wrong with the Jewish people, and they could never have emerged to receive the Torah had they not gone through this suffering. So don't think I remember you now, right, after the fact. Now when I'm saving you, now all of a sudden I remember you. No, pakod pakadati eschem. I already remembered you. I didn't forget you. Even the what you see as evil and suffering was basically for your good. And if you don't see that, then the whole concept of thanking God for saving us doesn't make any sense. Because we once gave the example of the person walking down the street, somebody comes and breaks his legs, and tells him that he's an orthopedic surgeon and he needs practice, so he's going to heal him for free. And in 6 months he'll be walking like nothing ever happened. And it happens. He doesn't owe him any money. Doesn't owe him any thanks. Don't break my legs. Don't heal me. If you didn't break my legs, I'd be walking like nothing happened 6 months earlier, because what would happen? Huh? But on the other hand, if the person is, what's it called, if the reason the legs had to be broken is because the person had a disease, and the way to cure the disease is to break the legs and reset them, then you thank him for breaking your legs and for healing you. Because without breaking the legs, the disease would have progressed to a point where there was no return, no cure. So then the breaking of the legs is important. Then that's part of the cure. So if you don't look at the tzara, right, of the suffering as being a necessary operation, necessary part of the salvation, then there's no purpose to thank God for the salvation. Don't get me into trouble, don't take me out. But if you're getting into trouble, there's a reason for it. And without getting into that trouble, we'd be worse off than you thank God for putting you into the tzara and taking you out of it. And that's why the Shari Tshuva says that openly. When a person has tzaras and he's redeemed from them, he should thank God not only for the redemption, but for the tzaras too, that he gained something from them. If I didn't sit in the darkness, it wouldn't have been light for me. If I didn't fall, I wouldn't be able to stand up. Sometimes you need to fall down to be able to stand up steadily. Sometimes you need to go into the darkness to appreciate the light. And that's why the Chiddushei Arim says that there's two ideas of thanking God for a salvation: Hallel and Hodah. Hallel is for the salvation. Hodah is an admission that even the tzara was necessary. I needed that tzara. And that's why the word Nes is comprised of two letters. Nun represents falling, Nefila. Samech is supporting. You thank God for the fall and for the support, not just for one of them. And that's why by the Seder of Pesach, Maschilim b'gnus, or Messiah b'shvach, we start with the bad, Avodim hayinu, we mention the bondage, and then only after that we mention the redemption. Because you can't give thanks just for the redemption. Because then what was it necessary to have the bondage? That wouldn't have been better if God avoided getting us into bondage. So you have to realize that we're giving thanks for both. There was a reason why we needed that bondage. It hurt, but the hurt was necessary. And then, after we had that hurt, then we were able to be redeemed. Because if we didn't have that hurt, right, we would have descended even lower and lower and never would have been redeemed. Yeah. But hold on, just want you to almost finish, okay? And then that's why it says that after God redeems us, the datem ki ani Hashem, then you'll know that I'm the God who will take you out of Mitzrayim, right? So the idea is hamotzi eschem can mean in the future who is going to take you out, but it also means who took you out, because we make hamotzi lechem in haaretz. The Gemara brings a proof from here that the word hamotzi can also mean after the fact. Right, the Gemara brings from other places, it means after the fact. Here it seems to be before the fact. Hamotzi eschem, I'm going to take you out. So then you couldn't make a bracha. Motzi lechem min ha'aretz. God took this bread out of the earth already. He's not going to take it out. But the idea is that it has both connotations. Hamotzi can mean who will take you out, but you won't really be able to appreciate it until you're out and look back. Then you'll be able to appreciate even the shibud, the bondage that you had. And that's what the answer Moshe Rabbeinu was given. When Moshe Rabbeinu asked, how come there are tzaddikim in the world that suffer, and rishayim who prosper? So God basically answered him, v'ra'isa achorai. You'll be able to understand this in retrospect. Uponai lo yero, but you'll never understand it before the fact. While you're in the midst of everything, you don't see the whole picture. When the whole picture will be complete, you'll look back, you'll be able to understand it. But you won't be able to understand it looking ahead. Okay? And the Shamshon for her says a little bit differently. He says, it says, Hinei makom iti. God, as if tells Moshe Rabbeinu, from my perspective up here, I see the whole picture, there's no problem. It's only from your perspective down there that there's a problem. But if you come to where I'm standing and you see my perspective, you'll see there's no problem. They say, we'll end with a story. In the Holocaust, Rav Svi Hirsch Meisels, the Weizner Rav, who was in the end of his life after the Holocaust, he emigrated to America. He was a rabbi in Chicago for many years. So he wrote a chronicle of what happened to him during Auschwitz. And there he says the following thing. He said he's once called in to the office of the commandant of the camp. And everybody knew that if he called you in, nobody ever went out of that office alive. He was a sadist, and he liked calling individuals in and shooting them on the spot. So he imagined that he's going to be shot. So he said, he gave his coat to one person, his boots to another person, his ration of food to another one, and he bid farewell to them, and he realized this is it. He's going on his last walk, and he's not going to return. Comes into the office there, and the commandant of the camp says to him, Rabbi, don't you have questions on your God, how he's permitting us to do such terrible things to you? So the Weizner said, when I was a little boy in Cheder, so our Rebbe told us, don't ask too many questions on God, because he'll invite you up to answer them, and you don't want to be invited up so fast. You want to be in this world for at least 120 years. You don't want to have to be invited up so your questions can be answered. So if you're smart, you won't ask too many questions. That's what his Rebbe said. Since then, he said, I don't ask too many questions on God, because I'm not interested in being invited up so fast. The commandant laughed, and he let him go. He liked the answer. In any case, that's the idea. We both learn from this parsha that a person has to question vis-a-vis himself, what can I learn from this suffering? At the same time, to understand that it's only suffering in how we see it. But in the long-term, eternal view, universal view, it's everything's for the good. But it's only for the good if we get something out of it, and we learn from it, and we utilize it. So both things go together. The suffering, the pain, the sympathy, the empathy is one review, how I can react to it. At the same time, I have to believe that from God's standpoint, it's all for the good. And I have to accept it, therefore, b'simcha, with an inner, not happiness, but an inner feeling of tranquility, that's a good word, or? Contentment, yeah. I have to feel content that I know, and tranquil that I know that ultimately it's for the good. I'm crying, but I realize my crying's for a purpose. You know, Abraham Lincoln said when in the Gettysburg Address, right, that these people didn't die in vain. No, they died, didn't they bring them back to life? But if you knew they didn't die in vain, there was a purpose for it, it made it easier to accept. Something that you could feel more at peace with. I hear.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear. But the idea is like this. Since we are human beings and we live in this physical world and we are limited and we don't see it as God sees it and we have the pain, so for the most part, that's how most people react, right? The fact that I know that it's for the good, right, that's intellectual. That's not what I see and feel. It's not what's sensory. So God put us on both of those levels. What we feel, if you use it properly, right, is necessary for you. But intellectually, inside, on a soul level, you have to understand, you have to feel that what I'm feeling and what I'm crying and what hurts, because it does hurt, right? There's a purpose to it. So it doesn't diminish the hurt or the crying, it just gives it purpose. And that makes it easier to accept and to deal with. Guilt?
Yeah.
It's not. Guilt is also a positive thing if it leads you to try and correct the situation. If it leads you to give up and just to make yourself nobody and nothing and feel bad because you're guilty, then that's a negative thing. But if the guilt makes you feel I'm guilty and now what can I do to correct the situation, that kind of guilt is fine. Okay, so the few ways, right? In the time when there was prophets, they could tell us exactly what it was. When there's no prophets, you try to associate the tsara you're going through with things similar to that in your life, right? If whatever area of life it is, whatever part of the body, what can I learn from this, either to correct something in the past where I used that part of the body the wrong way, right? Or, it can't be that specific sometimes, what can I know that I need to correct that I can use this as an incentive to do? It's giving me an incentive to feel that everything's not right. What can I make things better right in my life spiritually, that maybe the physical things will also become right? Yeah. Sometimes you can relate it directly. Remember once I was driving and somebody was sitting in the front seat and he was telling me something that was probably Lashon Hara about some Gadol b'Yisrael, right, of complaints he had, how come this Gadol didn't do what he thought he should do. And it was hard to listen to him because the car was making a lot of noise, so I leaned over, you know, to put my ear so I could hear. The next morning I woke up with the most terrible earache I ever had in my life, in that ear. Right away, I realized that was it. It must be. This is direct. It can't be anything else. I called the guy up early in the morning, and I told him, I want to tell you right now that I did something wrong by listening to you. You did something wrong by saying what you said, and because of that, I'm suffering with an earache, right? So I want to tell you right now that I protest what you said the day before, and you yourself should do tshuva also before you get a mouth toothache or whatever. What? No. No, definitely not. Sometimes it's an incentive, it's nisayon, it's a test to be able to do better. Sometimes it's a tikkun for something that needs a tikkun, but not a punishment because you did something wrong. Just something that's not right that needs to be correct. There could be a million reasons why. Not always a punishment. You always have to try to find what does this agitate me to do better. That's all. Had you not been in the hospital, they wouldn't have.